stealing black people out of Africa. Three, brainwashing black people. Four, holding black people in captive for more than 300 years. Five, killing over 50 million black people without a cause. Six, teaching black people to hate themselves.
You are tuned to WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 FM, independent community radio, broadcasting from the campus of the University of Bridgeport, serving Fairfield, New Haven, and Litchfield counties in Connecticut, and Suffolk County in New York's Long Island. We stream around the world at WPKN.org. Tune in radio, Radio Free America, and WPKN's free app, WPKN Live. Information on WPKN podcasts at WPKN.org. WPKN Radio, listener-powered community radio, serving you since 1963. Hello, what's your point?
You know, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, Garnett, the important role that you're playing on WPKN in not simply independent journalism and making sure voices get out. The reality is that as we talk about social media and clickivism and hashtags, conversation, like deep dialogue about these issues, is really what we're going to need if we're going to ever get to that point of reimagination. So I just wanted to thank you. You know, we've got to live for the revolution, and that revolution really is going to have to be one that allows us to conquer these inequalities and move forward as a nation as a whole, but also as a community united.
Okay, thank you so much. Very important for the continuation and maintenance of a democracy. One should be tolerant of all views different to yours. It is much better to use words to settle differences than with weapons. You see, weapons destroy human beings. When all these differing views are put together, a consensus should be found to move the nation forward together for one common cause. At the end of an argument, we may disagree but not become disagreeable. Garnet Ankle. The show is What's Your Point? It's aired fortnightly between 9 a.m. Eastern and about 9:55 a.m. and between 9:55 and 10. Time for the public service announcements. All right, so my thought for this morning. We believe that the idea of equality is the only enduring principle by which mankind may be guided in the conduct of national and international affairs. Michael Manley, excerpts from a speech delivered at United Nations General Assembly, October 2, 1972. Michael Manley was the son of one of Jamaica's national heroes. He was the fourth prime minister of the island of Jamaica. And some years ago, there was a big buzz out for having him installed as the eighth national hero of the island, but it fell apart. His cousin and his father were named national heroes. His father, Norman Washington Manley, was a premier of Jamaica. He was the head of the government of Jamaica before Jamaica gained its political independence in 1962, August 6th. And his cousin, Sir Alexander Bustamante, the first prime minister of the island of Jamaica. And the focus is on Malcolm X. Malcolm X on What's Your Point? And love him or hate him, Malcolm X was an American Muslim minister and a human rights activist. Many people saw him as a courageous advocate for the rights of black people, a man who indicted white America in the harshest terms for its crimes against black Americans. Others accuse him of preaching prejudice and violence. And just a reminder, black people cannot be racist. Black people can be prejudiced, but not be racist. I hear this on the news every day about black people being racist. Black people cannot be racist in a white-dominated world, a white-dominated society. White people can be racist, but not blacks. If black people do the similar thing to white people, it is called prejudice, not racist. You've got to be in power and be able to command the instruments of wealth and power in order to be a racist. So just to make that clear, I hear it on the news every day about blacks being racist and just hogwash. Let's have a listen to Malcolm X's speeches. Of course, Malcolm X was born Malcolm Little. Later, he became Malcolm X. Let's listening.
And I, for one, as a Muslim, believe that the white man is intelligent enough. If he were made to realize how black people really feel and how fed up we are without that old compromise and sweet talk. Why, you're the one that make it hard for yourself. The white man believes you when you go to him with that old sweet talk, because you've been sweet talking him ever since he brought you here. Stop sweet talking him. Tell him how you feel. Tell him how, what kind of hell you've been catching, and let him know that if he's not ready to clean his house up, if he's not ready to clean his house up, he shouldn't have a house. Should catch on fire and burn down. They call Mr. Muhammad a hate teacher because he makes you hate dope and alcohol. They call Mr. Muhammad a black supremacist because he teaches you and me not only that we're as good as the white man, but better than the white man. Yes, better than the white man. You are better than the white man. And that's not saying anything. That's not saying, you're nowhere just to be equal with him. Who is he to be equal with? You look at his skin. You can't compare your skin with his skin. Why, your skin look like gold beside his skin. There was a time when we used to drool in the mouth over white people. We thought they were pretty because we were blind. We were dumb. We couldn't see them as they are. But since the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has come and taught us the religion of Islam, which has cleaned us up and made us so we can see for ourselves, now we can see that old pale thing to look exactly as he looks. Nothing but an old pale thing.
You were born in Omaha, is that right?
Yes, sir.
And your family left Omaha when you were what, 1 year old?
I imagine about a year old.
And why did they leave Omaha?
Well, to my understanding, the Ku Klux Klan burned down one of their homes in Omaha.
We had a lot of Ku Klux Klan. This made your family feel very unhappy, I'm sure.
Well, insecure, if not unhappy.
So you must have a somewhat prejudiced point of view, a personally prejudiced point of view. In other words, you cannot look at this in a broad academic sort of way, really.
I think that's incorrect, because despite the fact that that happened in Omaha, and then when we moved to Lansing, Michigan, our home was burned down again. In fact, my father was killed by the Ku Klux Klan. And despite all of that, no one was more thoroughly integrated with whites than I. No one has lived more so in the society of whites than I.
In the 1920s, Marcus Garvey, a black nationalist, preached that black Americans should build a nation independent of white society. With membership in the hundreds of thousands, Garvey's Universal Negro Improvement Association sought closer ties with African countries. The UNIA had its own flag, its own national anthem, and an African legion pledged to defend black people at home and abroad. The U.S. Bureau of Investigation labeled Garvey one of the prominent Negro agitators. The federal government deported him in 1927, but Malcolm's parents remained Garveyites. Recruited new members. Louise wrote for the Garvey newspaper.
My mother is the one who would read to us the Garvey paper, which was called the Negro World. And she also would talk to us about ourselves as being independent. We shouldn't be calling ourselves Negroes or niggers, and that we were black people, and that we should be proud to call ourselves black people.
What is your real name?
Malcolm. Malcolm X.
Is that your legal name?
As far as I'm concerned, it's my legal name.
Would you mind telling me what your father's last name was?
My father didn't know his last name. My father got his last name from his grandfather, and his grandfather got it from his grandfather, who got it from the slave master. The real names of our people were destroyed during slavery.
Was there any line, any point in the genealogy of your family when you did have to use the last name? And if so, what was it?
The last name of my forefathers was taken from them when they were brought to America and made slaves. And then the name of the slave master was given, which we refuse. We reject that name today.
You mean you won't even tell me what your father's supposed last name was or gifted last name was?
I never acknowledge it whatsoever. Weapon the white man has had has been his ability to divide and conquer. If I take my hand and slap you, you don't even feel it. It might sting you because these digits are separated. But all I have to do to put you back in your place is bring those digits together. To have once been a criminal is no disgrace. To remain a criminal is the disgrace. I formerly was a criminal. I formerly was in prison. I'm not ashamed of that. You never can use that over my head. And that he's using the wrong stick. I don't feel that stick. They charged Jesus with sedition. Didn't they do that? He was against Caesar. They said he was discriminating because he told his disciples, go not the way of the Gentiles, but rather go to the lost sheep. Go to the people who don't know who they are, who are lost from the knowledge of themselves, and who are strangers in a land that is not theirs. Go to those people. Go to the slaves. Go to the second-class citizens. Go to the ones who are suffering the brunt of Caesar's brutality. And if Jesus were here in America today, he wouldn't be going to the white man. The white man is the oppressor. He would be going to the oppressed. He would be going to the humble. He would be going to the lowly. He would be going to the rejected and the despised. He would be going to the so-called American Negro.
How did you happen to join the Muslim movement?
I was in prison.
I was a very wayward, criminal, backward, illiterate, uneducated, and whatever other negative characteristics you can think of, type of person, until I heard the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And because of the impact that it had upon me in giving me a desire to reform myself and rehabilitate myself for the first time in my life, and also being able to see the effect that it had upon others, this is what made me accept it. And I noticed that after being exposed to the religious teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, immediately it instilled within me such a high degree of racial pride and racial dignity that I wanted to be somebody, and I realized that I couldn't be anybody by begging the white man for what he had, but that I had to get out here and try and do something for myself or make something out of myself. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad has set up more businesses than any black man in America.
Let us remember that we're not brutalized because we're Baptists. We're not brutalized because we're Methodists. We're not brutalized because we're Muslims. We're not brutalized because we're Catholics. We're brutalized because we are black people in America. I'm telling you, they came out of those cars, and we have enough witnesses to hang them. With their guns smoking. Chief Parker knows this, Mayor Yardy knows this, and every police official in the city knows that. They didn't fire no warning shots in the air. They fired warning shots point blank at innocent, unarmed, defenseless Negroes. As I say, two of the brothers were shot in the back. Another was shot in the shoulder. Another was shot, two of them were shot, excuse the expression, through the penis. Let me tell you something, and I'll tell you why you say we hate white people. We don't hate anybody. We love our own people so much, they think we hate the ones who are inflicting injustice against them.
For them to get a fair trial, there wouldn't be no necessity for a trial at all. These are the victims of police bullets, and you don't take the victim in court. As a criminal, you take the one who shot the victim in court. And it is the police who should be on trial here in Los Angeles.
Ronald Stokes was not the least among the followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He was one of the highest. He was the secretary of our Los Angeles mob. And as we explained in that rally on May, many of you thought that we should go right on out then and make war on the white man. You wanted to do it yourself, didn't you? Didn't you? You wanted some action then, didn't you? Because you don't like the idea of white people shooting black people down, do you? And you're ready to do something about it, aren't you? We know you are. And the white man should be thankful that God has given the Honorable Elijah Muhammad the control over his followers that he has, so that they can play it cool, calm, and collected. And leave it in the hands of God.
It gives me great pleasure and an honor and a privilege at this time to introduce to you and present to you the Messenger of Allah, your and my beloved leader and teacher, the most honorable and humble Elijah Muhammad.
As Muslims, we believe
that separation is the best way and the only sensible way, not integration. And but on the other hand, when we see our people being brutalized by white bigots, white racists, we think that they are foolish to allow themselves to be beaten and brutalized and do nothing whatsoever to protect themselves. If a dog is biting a black man, the black man should kill the dog, whether the dog is a police dog, a hound dog, or any kind of dog. If a dog is fixed on a black man, when that black man is doing nothing but trying to take advantage of what the government says is supposed to be his, then that black man should kill that dog or any two-legged dog who sticks the dog on him.
The goal of Dr. King is full equality and full rights of citizenship for Negroes.
The goal of Dr. Martin Luther King is to give Negroes a chance to sit in a segregated restaurant beside the same white man who had brutalized them for 400 years. The goal of Dr. Martin Luther King is to get Negroes to forgive the people who have brutalized them for 400 years by lulling them to sleep and making them forgetting what those whites have done to them. But the masses of black people in America today don't go for what Martin Luther King is putting down. As you said in one of your articles, it's psychologically insecure, something of that sort. I forget how you put it. But you didn't endorse what Martin Luther King was doing yourself.
I do not reject his goals of full integration and full equality rights for American citizens. Do you reject these goals?
If you don't think that he's walking on the right road, I'm quite sure you don't agree that he'll get to the right place.
It's been suggested also that this movement preaches the gospel of violence.
No, the black people in this country have been the victims of violence at the hands of the white man for 400 years. And following the ignorant Negro preachers, we have thought that it was godlike to turn the other cheek to the brute that was brutalizing us. And today, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is showing black people in this country that just as the white man and every other person on this earth has God-given rights, natural rights, civil rights, any kind of rights that you can think of when it comes to defending himself, black people should have, we should have the right to defend ourselves also.
One white man named Lincoln supposedly fought the Civil War to solve the race problem, and the problem is still here. Then another white man named Kennedy came along running for president and told Negroes what all he was going to do for them if they voted for him, and they voted for him 80%. He's been in office now for 3 years, and the problem is still here. When police dogs were biting black women and black children and black babies in Birmingham, Alabama, that Kennedy talked about what he couldn't do because no federal law had been violated, and as soon as the Negroes exploded and began to protect themselves and got the best of the crackers in Birmingham, then Kennedy sent for the troops. And there was no, he didn't have any new law when he sent for the troops when the Negroes erupted than he had at the time when whites were erupting. So we are within our rights and with justice, with justification, when we express doubt concerning the ability of the white man to solve our problem, and also when we express doubt concerning his integrity, concerning his sincerity, because you will have to confess that the problem has been around here for a long time, and whites have been saying the same thing about it for the past 100 years, and it's no nearer a solution today than it was 100 years ago.
Think of Cassius' victory in Miami.
I think it was a great victory. He proved he was the best man.
And where were you during the fight?
I was in the auditorium watching the fight.
Right at ringside?
Right at ringside. I was in seat 7.
All I have got to do is get involved. You and I have to be right there breathing down their throat. Every time they look over their shoulder, we want them to see us. We want to make them pass the strongest civil rights bill they've ever passed. Because we know even after they pass it, they can't enforce it. In order to do this, we're signing a voters registration drive. We have to get everybody in Harlem registered, not as Democrats or Republicans, but registered as independents. If you don't have the sense of responsibility to get registered, we'll move you out of town.
Malcolm called for an aggressive plan, not only to gain political power, but to move black people towards total control of their community.
It's going to be the ballot or the bullet.
Economic philosophy is also black nationalism, which means that the black man should have a hand in controlling the economy of the so-called Negro community. He should be developing the type of knowledge that will enable him to own and operate the businesses and thereby be able to create employment for his own people, for his own kind. And the social philosophy also is black nationalism, which means that instead of the black man trying to force himself into the society of the white man, we should be trying to eliminate from our own society the ills and the defects and make ourselves likable and sociable among our own kind.
Malcolm, have your experiences with white-skinned Muslims in Africa and the Middle East made you feel that relations between Negroes and whites who are not Muslims is any more possible?
When I was on the pilgrimage, I had close contact with Muslims whose skin would in America be classified as white, and with Muslims who themselves would be classified as white in America. But these particular Muslims didn't call themselves white. They looked upon themselves as human beings, as part of the human family, and therefore they looked upon all other segments of the human family as part of that same family. Well, now, they had a different look or a different air or a different attitude than that which is reflected in the attitude of the man in America who calls himself white. So I said that if Islam had done that for them, perhaps if the white man in America would study Islam, perhaps they could do the same thing for him.
Malcolm,
are you prepared to go into the United Nations at this point and ask that charges be brought against the United States for its treatment of American Negroes?
Oh, yes. Please.
I think you're right in my camera.
The audience will have to be quiet. As I pointed out when I was during my traveling, that African nations and Asian nations and Latin American nations look very hypocritical when they stand up in the United Nations condemning the racist practices of South Africa and that which is practiced by Portugal and Angola, and saying nothing in the UN about the racist practices that are manifest every day against Negroes in this society.
Why are they threatening your life?
Well, primarily because they're afraid that I will tell the real reason that I'm out of the black Muslim movement, which I never told. I kept to myself. But the real reason is that Elijah Muhammad, the head of the movement, is the father of 8 children by 6 different teenage girls, 6 different teenage girls who were his private personal secretary.
Are you not perhaps afraid of what might happen to you as a result of making these revelations?
Oh, yes. I probably am a dead man already.
What do you mean?
When you understand the makeup of the Muslim movement and the psychology of the Muslim movement, as long as by having confidence in the leader of the Muslim movement, if someone came to me and I had no knowledge whatsoever of what had taken place and they told me what I'm saying, I would kill them myself. The only thing that would prevent me from killing someone who made a statement like this, they would have to be able to let me know that it's true. Now, if anyone had come to me other than Mr. Muhammad's son, I never would have believed it even enough to look into it. But I had been around him so closely, I had seen indications of the reality of it, but my religious sincerity made me block it out of my mind.
The first thing that the independent African nations did was to form an organization called the Organization of African Unity. This organization of Afro-American Unity, which has the same aim and objective, to fight whoever gets in our way. To bring about the complete independence of people of African descent here in the Western Hemisphere, and first here in the United States, and bring about the freedom of these people by any means necessary.
I read once passingly about a man named Shakespeare. I only read about him passingly, but I remember one thing he wrote that kind of moved me. He put it in the mouth of Hamlet, I think it was, who said, "To be or not to be." He was in doubt about something. Whether it was nobler in the mind of man to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune,
moderation or to take up arms against the sea of troubles and by opposing, end them. And I go for that. If you take up arms, you'll end it. But if you sit around and wait for the one who's in power to make up his mind that he should end it, you'll be waiting a long time. And in my opinion, the young generation of whites, blacks, brown, whatever else there is, you're living at a time of extremism, a time of revolution, a time when there's got to be a change. People in power have misused it, and now there has to be a change, and a better world has to be built, and the only way it's going to be built is with extreme methods. And I, for one, will join in with anyone, don't care what color you are, as long as you want to change this miserable condition that exists on this earth. Thank you.
That the people in this part of the world would do well to listen to Dr. Martin Luther King and give him what he's asking for and give it to him fast before some other factions come along and try to do it another way.
To know that my house was bombed, it was bombed by the black Muslim movement upon the orders of Elijah Muhammad. Now, they had come around, so they had planned to do it from the front and the back so that I couldn't get out. And the fire hit the window, and it woke up my second oldest baby. But the fire burned on the outside of the house. But had that one gone through that window, it would have fallen on a 6-year-old girl, a 4-year-old girl, and a 2-year-old girl. And I'm going to tell you, if it had done it, I'd taken my rifle and gone after anybody in sight. I would not wait. And I say that because of this. The police know the criminal operation of the black Muslim movement because they have thoroughly infiltrated.
Right.
The only thing that I regret in all of this is that two black groups have to fight and kill each other off. Elijah Muhammad could stop the whole thing tomorrow just by raising his hand. Really, he could. He could stop the whole thing by raising his hand. But he won't. He doesn't love black people. He doesn't even love his own followers. Proof of which, they're killing each other. They killed one in the Bronx. They shot another one in the Bronx. They tried to get 6 of us Sunday morning. And the pattern has developed across the country. The man has gone insane, absolutely out of his mind. Besides, you can't be 70 years old and surround yourself by a handful of 16, 17, 18-year-old girls and keep your right mind. You can't do it.
What is your ultimate aim? The only way the problem can be solved. First, the white man and the black man have to be able to sit down at the same table. The white man has to feel free to speak his mind without hurting the feelings of that Negro. And the so-called Negro has to feel free to speak his mind without hurting the feelings of the white man. Then they can bring the issues that are under the rug out on top of the table and take an intelligent approach to get the problem solved. Do you consider yourself militant? I consider myself malcontent.
You're in touch with WPKN. The show is What's Your Point with your host, Garnet Ankle. And you've been listening to Malcolm X speeches. And love him or loathe him, Malcolm X was a Muslim minister and human rights activist. And he said many things that many people didn't like. And by the same breath, it's a part of history that we should know and we should let others know of. Malcolm X on Any Means Necessary.
We want one thing. We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
The firebrand Malcolm X, and up next, Malcolm X, nationalist or humanist, 1967, and you know, the life and the struggles of Malcolm X is a part of American history, which we should know.
On February 21st, 1965, Malcolm X was assassinated.
In his eulogy to Malcolm X, Ozzie Davis said, "Many will ask what Harlem finds to honor in this bold young captain, and we will smile. Malcolm was our manhood, our living black manhood. This was his meaning to his people, and in honoring him, we honor the best in ourselves." His widow, Mrs. Betty Shabazz, tells of his childhood.
Well, his early life, his family was disrupted. His father was killed when he was six, and his mother later went to a mental institution. So from the time he was about 6 years old on, he reared himself. He was in foster homes and boys' homes until he was about 15, and then he went for a year and a half and lived with a half-sister in Boston. And he was in prison, and it was kind of rugged, really.
After his release from prison, Malcolm X became a minister for the Nation of Islam. In his autobiography, Malcolm X said, "No sane black man really wants integration. No sane white man really wants integration. The only solution is complete separation from the white man."
And one of the facts in your estimation is that Negro and white can never live together in America. Can never
coexist.
Well,
evidently, the white man feels that the Negro can never live with him because it's the white man who is stopping integration. I'm not the one who is stopping Negroes from integrating with whites. I'm not the one who keeps Negroes from integrating white schools. And so don't put the burden of proof on me. It is the white man himself who is guilty, and whose guilt proves that the Negro and the white man can't live side by side. Now, if I'm wrong in saying they can't, just prove that I'm wrong by doing it, or just show me one place where it's done. It can't be done in New York City. It won't be done anywhere in this country.
Malcolm X became one of the best-known ministers in the Nation of Islam, but he was silenced for 90 days after the assassination of President Kennedy.
Malcolm, would I be correct in saying you're going to initiate a new movement in this country?
No, I don't think I'm equipped to initiate a new movement, but it's my intention to take the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad make them work on a broader level.
Mm-hmm. How long has this been building up, this decision to make the change?
Well, I have been able to see for some time that it's that I do run into obstacles in trying to help him within the movement. So I want to help him just that bad, just that much. So it's my intention to try and do it now in the only way that I know how. And I think I can do it better without the restrictions I would run into by being a part of the Muslim movement in this country. That is, the Muslim movement as it now exists.
How severe were the restrictions these past 90 days?
Oh, during the past 90 days, they were most severe. I've been completely silent.
Not able to talk is a real affliction for you, is that right?
Not only have I not been able to speak as a Muslim, I haven't even been able to speak as a man.
Actually, going back to that incident, you have told me on other occasions that you didn't actually say you were glad the president was dead. What did you say, Malcolm?
No, my subject that day was God's judgment of white America. And I showed the different incidents that had been building up, step by step, the fulfillment of prophecy, and that all of these things that were taking place were the result of some seeds that were badly sown, or some bad seeds that were sown. And the death of the president I referred to as the result of other things, a combination of things. And surprisingly, this is what the whole country was saying, that it was a climate of hate. So chickens coming home to roost means the same thing.
And this is what you said, chickens were coming home to roost.
Yes.
But at no time did you say you were glad the president...
No, I did say this, that it pleases me to see that the wisdom of the prophets, these ancient prophets, was so vast that they could foresee these things exactly as they were to come to pass thousands of years ago. This was part of my lecture that day,
mm-hmm.
And they twisted it.
In April 1964, Malcolm made his first pilgrimage to Mecca.
Malcolm, on your trip abroad, you said you sensed a feeling of great brotherhood, and that conceivably you would be working toward integration in this country now. At least this is what you're reported to have said. Have you any comment on it?
I don't think that I ever mentioned anything about working toward integration. If I recall, I pointed out that while I was at Mecca making the pilgrimage, I spoke about the brotherhood that existed at all levels,
and among all people who were there on that Hajj, who had accepted the religion of Islam. I mean, perhaps it could drive some of the racism from this society as it has driven racism from the Muslim society.
Do you accept immigration as a possible solution to the racial problem in this country?
No. People cloud the issue when they bring in the word integration. Integration can't even be defined. This is one of the reasons why it hasn't been realized.
When a letter was written back, and it was published in the New York Times, I think Mr. Handler published it, a lot of people felt that he was becoming an integrationist, which was not true. He had gone to Mecca, and he had merely written about what he saw. And people reported it as if, you know, he had gone there and planted these people there. So this was an observation on his part, and he was not in the least becoming an integrationist. His role was forever the fight for black freedom. He wanted to raise the level of the struggle from one of civil rights to one of human rights, and he felt that civil rights confined our struggle or our fight for freedom to the borders of the United States. And if we internationalized our struggle, if we got allies, and everyone realized the importance of getting allies, even this country in the Revolutionary War. They sent people all over, forming correspondence committee to explain their plight to the world, and trying to get allies. And I think the French and the British and Spain joined this country in helping her win her independence. And just like they needed allies, you know, the black people needed allies, and I think this was one of the reasons for his trips.
Well, my purpose here is to remind the African heads of state that there are 22 million of us in America who are also of African descent, and to remind them also that we are the victims of America's colonialism or American imperialism, and that our problem is not an American problem, it's a human problem. It's not a Negro problem, it's a problem of humanity. It's not a problem of civil rights, but a problem of human rights.
And what do you hope for from this conference?
Well, we hope to bring pressure upon them, or rather we hope to impress upon them the importance of their bringing pressure and world opinion upon the United States to take some meaningful effort to solve our problem in America. We want them to help us get our problem before the United Nations and charge America with violating our human rights in the same way that South Africa is charged with violating the human rights of our people in that area.
And what sort of reaction have you been getting from the African leaders?
Well, I've gotten a good reaction, a very sympathetic reaction, and an understanding reaction. Many of them have been misinformed by the American government into thinking that black people in America don't identify with Africa, and therefore they've restrained themselves from voicing their interest in our problem. But I've impressed upon them that our problem is their problem, as well as their problems are our problems.
Continuous struggle, Malcolm X attempted to unify the civil rights movement with black nationalism. He speaks to students in Selma, Alabama, a few weeks before his death.
Then now, if the federal government does not find it within its power and ability to investigate a criminal organization such as the Klan, then you and I are within our right to wire Secretary General Ussoff of the United Nations and charge the federal government in this country behind Lyndon B. Johnson with being derelict in its duty to protect the human rights of 22 million black people in this country. And in their failure to protect our human rights, they are violating the United Nations Charter, and they are not qualified to continue to sit in that international body and talk about what human rights should be done in other countries on this earth. To say this, and I'll sit down. Back during slavery, when black people like me talked to the slaves, they didn't kill them. They'd send some old house Negro along behind him to undo what he said. You
have to read the history of slavery to understand this. There were two kinds of Negroes. There was that old house Negro and the field Negro. And the house Negro always looked out for his master. When the field Negroes got too much out of line, he held them back in check. He put them back on the plantation. The house Negro could afford to do that because he lived better than the field Negro. He ate better, he dressed better, and he lived in a better house. He lived right up next to his master in the attic or the basement. He ate the same food his master ate and wore his same clothes. And he could talk just like his master. Good diction. And he loved his master more than his master loved himself. That's why he didn't want his master hurt. If the master got sick, he'd say, "What's the matter, boss? We sick?" He was as sick as the master. When the master's house caught a fire, he'd try and put the fire out. He didn't want his master's house burned. He never wanted his master's property threatened. And he was more defensive of it than the master was. That was the house Negro. But then you had some field Negro who lived in huts, had nothing to lose. They wore the worst kind of clothes. They ate the worst food. And they caught hell. They felt the sting of the lash. They hated their master. Oh, yes, they did. If the master got sick, they prayed that the master died. If the master's house caught a fire, they prayed for a strong wind to come along. This was the difference between the two. And today you still have house Negroes and field Negroes. I'm a field Negro. If I can't live in the house as a human being, I'm praying for a wind to come along. If the master won't treat me right and he's sick, I'll tell the doctor to go in the other direction. But if all of us are going to live as human beings, as brothers, then I'm for a society of human beings that can practice brotherhood. So before I sit down, I want to thank you for listening to me. I hope I haven't put anybody on the spot. I'm not intending to try and stir you up and make you do something that you wouldn't have done anyway. I pray that God will bless you in everything that you do. I pray that you will grow intellectually so that you can understand the problems of the world and where you fit into in that world picture. And I pray that all the fear that has ever been in your heart will be taken out. And when you look at that man, if you know he's nothing but a coward, you won't fear him. If he wasn't a coward, he wouldn't gang up on you. He wouldn't need to sneak around here. This is how they function. They function in mobs. That's a coward. They put on a sheet so you won't know who they are. That's a coward. No. The time will come when that sheet will be ripped off. If the federal government doesn't take it off, we'll take it off.
Although some of us may have disagreed with Malcolm X, or we disagree with each other about him, that is going from us served to bring us together.
And up next, we'll play a little part of Malcolm's death announcement and so forth. So you do stay tuned. And if you are a lover of history, you should not necessarily enjoy, but you should appreciate this part of American history, whether or not you agree with the sentiments of Malcolm X over some 50 years ago. Well, let's listen a little bit of Malcolm X's death announcement.
Malcolm X was killed by 16 gunshots fired at close range. He was 39 years old.
When my children were crying, you know, what's going on? What's going on? Are they going to shoot us? And I just knew they had shot him.
And that night we went into the Harlem community to walk and mingle with the people, there was a kind of sense of loss. And as we passed people, some who were even strangers, we would stop and greet each other and say what this man had meant to us.
He was a master teacher. And there is no greater loss to a community than the loss of a master teacher.
During the next 3 days, 20,000 people endured sub-freezing temperatures to say goodbye to Malcolm X.
Western clothes, and then the Muslims came and dressed him for a proper Muslim burial. They had a service. Shovels, but some of the black brothers said, no, we can't let you do that. We dig this grave. You know, we cover this brother with dirt. And it was a moving moment. And I was proud at that moment to be black and proud that my community and people, no matter what had been said by the outside world, said to the brother we loved and respected and admired you. And so we buried him, and there it is.
I woke up this morning when the man said freedom.
Malcolm X had a far-reaching effect on the civil rights movement. In the South, there had been a long tradition of self-reliance. Malcolm X's ideas now touched that tradition. In 1965, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee launched new strategies to challenge white control of Southern politics.
Our direction was clear: a heavy emphasis on nationalism. Strong as Malcolm had it, as strong as we could get it.
Michael and other SNCC members began a voter drive in Lowndes County, Alabama, known as Bloody Lowndes.
You have been listening to excerpts of speeches and interviews of Malcolm X right here on What's Your Point with Garnet Ankel on WPKN. And I'll next be on the air in a fortnight at 7 with Solidarity, and at 9 for What's Your Point?
Joseph Malcolm X, what men got vexed. They didn't want to see black men progress, and all along the way, black men have strayed.
This poem shall call names. Names like Lumumba, Kenyatta, Nkrumah, Hannibal, Atherton, Malcolm, Garvey, Haile Selassie. This poem is vexed about apartheid, racism, fascism, the Ku Klux Klan, riots in Brixton, Atlanta, Jim Jones.
The blood of Marcus, the blood of Malcolm was flowing through my veins.
That's right.
And I turn a vision, I can see it very plain.
Malcolm X.
Let's struggle. Let's struggle.
In a pool of blood. 1965.
Maximum respect for the great Malcolm X. Yeah, yeah, we.
When Spoonful pops up on the radio, it begins to feel a lot like summer for me. What music conjures up summer for you? WPKN will hold a Summer Love fundraising special July 23rd and 24th, celebrating your favorite summer songs. We just need to hear from you. What music makes it summer for you? Go to WPKN.org and click on the Summer Love icon and tell us those songs that got your summer groove on. Music that wells up memories of summer at the shore, the lake, popping open a fire hydrant, barbecues and picnics. It's the summer soundtrack of our lives. Songs of the summer, Summer Love, here on your radio station, WPKN.
96 degrees in the shade.
Click on the Summer Love icon at listener-supported WPKN.org.
Said it was 96 degrees.
This is FC Buzz on WPKN Radio. A brief look at what's happening around Fairfield County.
This is David Green with this week's selection from FC Buzz Events, the best guide to arts and culture in Fairfield County. Find it at culturalalliancefc.org. Don't forget to check out, like, and follow our Artist of the Day on our social media pages. Each day, a different member artist shows work influenced by the pandemic and the Black Lives Matter movement. Hashtag CAFC Artist of the Day. Through July 29th, the Milford Art Center, the MAC, presents an online group exhibit, Red, inspired by the color and juried by Milford artist Chris Rinn. The subject matter, emotions, expression, placement, or composition of each piece expresses what the color means to each artist. Sunday, 4 o'clock, the Richfield Playhouse presents an encore presentation in HD of the Philip Glass opera Akhenaten, with Anthony Roth Costanzo singing the title role of the Egyptian pharaoh who attempted to inspire his people to adopt a new religion, abandoning the worship of the old gods for that of a single deity. This production of Akhenaten was originally created by LA Opera, Improbable, and English National Opera, where it premiered, winning the 2017 Olivier Award for Best New Opera Production. Sunday, 8 o'clock, the Mark Twain Library presents on its YouTube channel Reading's own Michael Ian Black, comedian, actor, author, and creator of the podcast How to Be Amazing. In the latest edition in this series, that features Grammy winner Gene Gaffigan, director and comedy writer and producer of the critically acclaimed The Jim Gaffigan Show. Tuesday, 4 o'clock, the Pequot Library in its Zoom Meet the Author program presents Tessa Wiegert, interviewed by Sandy Wright. Wiegert is the author of Death in the Family, the first in a new mystery thriller series. Tuesday, 7 o'clock, the Westport Library presents acclaimed fantasy writers S.A. Chakraborty and Jennifer Armentrout in conversation online. Chakraborty is the author of the critically acclaimed and internationally best-selling The Diverbad Trilogy. Her work has been nominated for the Locus, World Fantasy, Crawford, and Astounding Awards. Jennifer Armentrout is the New York Times bestseller